Chapter 14. Duffy, the gardener's boy, had seen Rosanna half an hour before, running towards the sea.
"Come with me, Duffy,"
said Cuff. "And you, Mr. Betteridge, stay here till I come back." They hurried off towards the shivering sand. But not long afterwards, Duffy came running back. I had to send one of Rosanna's shoes quickly. I sent him back to say I would follow with the shoe. 15 minutes later, I reached the shore. Dark clouds were rushing low overhead. The sea was thundering at the mouth of the bay, sending great waves rolling in over the sand. Cuff was alone on the beach. Hearing me approach behind him, he turned. There was a look of horror in his eyes. He grabbed the shoe out of my hand and placed it in a footmark in the sand. It fitted exactly. We followed the footprints to the mouth of the bay. They went into the water at a place where the rocks and the sand joined. Seconds earlier, the rising tide had wiped them out. We looked everywhere for footsteps coming back towards land until the rising water forced us to stop. Cuff stared out over the waters, rushing in deeper and deeper over the whole face of the quicksand. There was a look of defeat on his face.
"A fatal accident has happened to her on those rocks," he said.
I could no longer feel the driving rain. All I could hear was her telling me that the sands seemed to be pulling her to a watery grave. The horror of it struck me. Gently, Cuff led me away from where she had died. Yolland ran up to us. He looked down at Rosanna's footprints dissolving in the rain.
"Is there any chance of finding her when the tide turns?"
asked the sergeant. "None," said the fisherman. "What the sand gets, the sand keeps forever." On our way back, Duffy ran up to us with a note. "Penelope found this in Rosanna's room," he said. Tears came to my eyes as I read it.
"Mr. Betteridge, when you next see the shivering sand, please try and forgive me. Yes, I found my grave there. I died grateful for your kindness. Rosanna Spearman."
The note had thrown the whole house into a state of panic. As we passed my lady's door, she threw it open violently, with a horrified look on her face. Mr. Franklin was trying to calm her. "This is your fault," she shouted at Cuff. "Gabriel, give this miserable person his money and remove him from my sight."
"I will accept your dismissal, but not your money," Cuff replied. "I am paid for doing my duty, which is not yet done."
Oddly, my lady seemed almost embarrassed by his flat, professional manner. He went on,
"When I have told you plainly, your ladyship, what action must be taken to get back the moonstone, my responsibilities will have ended."
After a moment's thought, my lady signalled Cuff and me to follow her back into her room.
"Your ladyship," said Cuff when we had sat down, "I believe some unbearable anxiety concerning the diamond drove Rosanna to suicide. And I believe your daughter can tell us whether this is true."
My lady took her checkbook, looked at Cuff steadily, and said,
"You suspect Miss Verinder of deceiving us by hiding the diamond for some purpose of her own?" "That is it, my lady."
"I know my daughter, Sergeant, and I can tell you she is absolutely incapable of doing what you suspect."
She sighed, controlling herself. Nevertheless, I give you permission to go on and explain yourself.
Thank you, said Cuff. But I must be frank, Your Ladyship. It has been my experience that young ladies of Miss Verinder's social position can have debts which they dare not admit to their nearest relatives and friends. Events and behaviour in this house suggest this to me. Miss Verinder is still extremely upset, more than 24 hours after losing her diamond. She has developed a sudden, strange dislike for Mr. Blake, the superintendent, and myself, the three people who have been most actively trying to find her jewel. And, of course, she refuses to cooperate. Her behaviour tells me she has debts and has pawned the diamond to pay them.
He continued, unbothered by our shocked silence.
That is the case against her. Now, what is the case against her and the dead Rosanna Spearman together? As soon as I saw Rosanna, I suspected her of being involved. It was a cleverly planned conspiracy from Miss Verinder's point of view. Better than leading us to think that the moonstone was simply lost, she could trick us into believing it was stolen by a woman with a criminal record. Poor dead Rosanna was the ideal person to help her pawn the stone privately. She knew one of the few men in London who could advance a large sum of money on such a famous jewel, without asking questions. I will now tell you what I propose to do. I intend to watch Miss Verinder closely, and I shall send one of my men to make an arrangement with that moneylender in London. You can be sure Rosanna gave his name to Miss Verinder. Would you agree to this?
No,
said my lady flatly.
Cuff went on, undiscouraged.
Another way, my lady, would be to tell Miss Verinder, without warning, of Rosanna's death. Sudden sorrow may encourage her to admit everything. Would you agree to this?
To my astonishment, my lady nodded.
Then, my lady, said Cuff, getting up,
I wish you good morning.
My lady raised her hand. Sergeant, I feel it would be better if I told her. I will go to Fritzing Hall. You may rely on me to try the experiment.
As soon as my lady had left, I informed Mr. Franklin of her decision. He decided to wait for the news from Fritzing Hall before leaving. I returned to Cuff. He was studying his diary.
I was seeing what my next professional appointment is, he said.
You think it's all over? I said.
I think Lady Verinder is an extremely clever woman. Now, where is that gardener? I promised to teach him something about roses before I left.
My lady's carriage returned earlier than expected. She had decided to stay at her sister's in Fritzing Hall for the time being. The driver brought two letters, one for Mr. Franklin, one for me. A cheque dropped out of mine when I opened it. The sergeant appeared on the steps.
Ah, he said in his sad way. News from her ladyship?
I read him the letter. Gabriel, Miss Verinder declared that she has never spoken a private word to Rosanna or communicated with her by other means. They never met, not even accidentally, on the night the diamond was lost. I warned her that her behaviour was inviting suspicion. She assured me that she has no debts to anybody, and that the diamond has never been in her possession since she put it in the drawer on Wednesday night. She remained stubbornly silent when I asked her if she could explain the stone's disappearance. Tears in her eyes, she said, "The day will come when you will know why I'm silent. Give Sergeant Cuff this check and tell him that I am absolutely certain that his suspicions are mistaken." Cuff's eyebrows went up when he looked at the check.
"I will always remember her ladyship's generosity," he said. But he placed it on the table. "A fine woman. Yes, Lady Verinder has smoothed things over very cleverly, for the moment. But we shall hear more of the Moonstone before too long."
"If you don't think Miss Rachel is telling the truth, then prove it," I said angrily. I was sick of his accusations. He was so obviously wrong. Miss Rachel was incapable of doing what he suspected. He wasn't offended. Quite the opposite. He took my hand and shook it.
"You're a fine man, sir,"
he said warmly.
"I won't say a word more about Lady Verinder and her daughter. I'll simply say that these three things will happen. First, you will hear from the Yollands after Rosanna's letter is delivered on Monday. Second, you will hear of the three Indians again. Here, if Miss Rachel remains here. In London, if she goes to London. And third, sooner or later, you will hear from Mr. Septimus Luker, a moneylender. Time will tell if I am right or wrong, Mr. Betteridge, and if we don't meet again before I retire from this dirty job, I hope you'll come and visit me at my cottage near London. And bring the gardener. I'll teach that man a thing or two about roses."
I couldn't help liking the man, even though I hated him.